I think for a lot of us, that U.S. game is kind of the game that's going to that'll resonate over the long haul. Let me ask you this. What did you guys learn, or what did your team learn playing the Brazilians in that gold medal game?
Well, I mean, I think playing Brazil is always a great learning experience, especially, you know, with a young group like we had. I just think they play their role so well. They move the ball so well. They make the pass at the right time, and they really, you know, they just understand the subtleties of the game. They're not super athletic, but they understand the subtleties of the game. They know the pockets to make passes out of, and they take advantage of things that you do in terms of mistakes. I mean, they're not unbelievably athletic, so you can sort of match up in some ways. And if from a layman's standpoint, it's like, well, I mean, you're quicker than them, and they're not that quick. They don't do this, but you know, they get the ball moving and they shoot the ball so well. You can do some things for a short period of time that look pretty effective, but nothing works for a long period of time. And I think that was really good for our young guys just to see it, that you need to understand how to play the game and get better every year you play. I mean, we had a lot of young guys who were unbelievable for us, and I think playing Brazil was a great experience for them.
David Jonesy here. How much is that part of, well, obviously we know experience. I mean, I always say you take the 5 30-year-olds, they'll go to the park and beat the 5 18-year-olds, because those guys from Brazil, as you said, they understand how to play. But how much of that is inbred within their system? And I'm looking at what's happening in Canada now, as guys are coming up and you know, with terrific coaching, and the game is being taught, and there's consistency in the teaching coming up through the system. How much is a team like Brazil, and I reflect back when they were all young in Argentina, like Ginobili and Oberto and Delfino and all of those guys, you know, Scola, and all of a sudden, yeah, they're going to be good when they get older. They grow together, and bang, you've got a really good team. How much of that is happening in other places, and how much of that do you want to see happening here in Canada?
Well, I think it's happening here. I think we have a pretty good. We've certainly got a great depth in our youth, and I think that was shown in just how well Jamal played and how well Dylan. I thought Dylan was great.
Yeah.
In the final. I mean, he's just fearless. I mean, he's got a lot to learn, but I mean, it was unbelievably. I mean, obviously Jamal is Jamal. He's special, and what he did in the U.S. game, you can't even describe for an 18-year-old kid. But I think some of what Dylan did was overlooked, My experience with Dylan was very, very positive. I mean, I came into it going, you know what, this kid's got a chance to be really good, but he doesn't really know how to play. You know, and a lot of kids who are at that age, they think they're pretty good because they've dominated their age group, but they don't really want to learn, or think they have to learn. He wants to learn, and he plays hard. And you know, he I think he could be really special if he continues to put himself in places where people are teaching him how to play and learning the game more and more. He was really good. Jamal. I mean, it's hard to what he did in the U.S. game. I mean, he struggled a bit in the Brazil game, but I think Argentina and Brazil they figured it out. They've got a grassroots system in place.
Yeah,
but they also know what their strengths are, and they, more importantly, they know what their weaknesses are, and they play the game to their strengths, and they try to avoid their weaknesses, and they have weaknesses. I mean, they really do have some weaknesses. I mean, when we cut it to 6, I mean, we took advantage of some of the weaknesses that they do have, but they play the game, and they teach the game, and they you know, I was saying to my wife jokingly on the drive home yesterday, I'm calling, like, man, if our kids want to play basketball, if they're going to be stuck with my body, I need to take them to Brazil for 2 years, because that's how they're going to have to figure out how to play. That's how they're going to have to play if they want to be high level pros. You know, like those guys. They just teach it right, and I think we're starting to do that with our kids. We've got a pretty good feel for the type of style we're going to play and type of athlete we're going to have, and I think we are doing a pretty good job of at the grassroots level teaching these kids how to play and how to play to have success. And you know, I mean, Jamal, he from a fan standpoint, they probably don't see the struggles that he had through the week. But he had struggles through the week. I mean, he had struggles defensively through the week. He had struggles with little subtle things. But he is so talented and he's so tough. And the kid is fearless. And you know what? He's just fun to coach. And he's smart. I mean, for me watching him, I mean, I could talk about 5-6 things that he really still struggles with, but his toughness level and his willingness to learn and his IQ at his age, you know, is off the charts, and he's gonna be special.
Hey Dave, who are some of the other players, or who are other players who may have opened some eyes as we look ahead to the FIBA's Americas? Because I think a lot of people were looking at this tournament as a way of perhaps determining who some of the depth players might be. For Canada, who are some of the other players you think caught the coaching staff's eye?
Well, I mean, I think Anthony Bennett was a really pleasant surprise it's the first time we've had him in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he's had his struggles, you know, in his first 2 years in the NBA, but you know what, he played the role we wanted him to play. He asked a million questions. He got better every single day in the 2 weeks. And, you know, he still has some struggles with small things, but he was so good. I mean, he rebounded so well. He attacked the basket. You know, when the coaches talked to him about facing up on every catch, he faced up on every catch and he became a nightmare to cover. He just did so many little things that, you know, you tend to think maybe an NBA guy who's a first overall pick isn't going to do those little things. But, you know, he's still got things to learn, obviously, but, you know, he kind of reminded me in positive ways of the way, you know, Joel Anthony and Kelly Olynyk and Robert Sacre played for us in the past 2 years. Like, just doing all the little things that people might not notice, but make a difference in terms of winning, and he did them on a consistent basis.
Dave, you guys are heading toward the qualifier now in Mexico, and I heard Jay this afternoon on with Greg Brady, and it's something that people maybe just don't understand about selecting a team, and I underscore the word team because it's parts that have to fit together. You don't just take the best 12 players. I mean, gone are the days where, you know, even the USA would roll out, you know, 12 all-stars, throw the ball out and say, away you go. You guys have got to pick a team. You've got to fit roles. You've got to have the parts fit together. I don't know if you have any specifics here or you're willing to share any, but there had to have been some guys that opened some eyes around, you know, fitting roles and being part going forward as you head toward the qualifier for FIBA Americas.
Oh, definitely. And I, again, it is all about picking a team. I mean, everybody who has their guys, and they all go, well, so-and-so is better than so-and-so. And you know, when someone says someone's better than someone, they're almost always right. But it depends on the role that they have to play, you know. And you know, is he a better, best, or second-best player than the guy who made it as the 10th, 11th, 12th guy? Yeah, probably. But the problem is, they're not competing for the first or second spot. They're competing for the 10th to 12th spot.
Right.
And they might, they're not, in many cases, those guys aren't even close in terms of being as good as the 10th, 11th, 12th guy, in terms of being a team guy, being ready to play when they're not playing a whole lot of minutes, and being able to play a role, being able to play without the basketball in their hands. I mean, that's a lot of it is, you know, past your top three guys, these guys got to be able to play with the ball not in their hands. Mm-hmm. And some guys are really good with the ball in their hands, and some guys are, so those same guys that are really good with the ball not in their hands are terrible when the ball's in their hands. They're terrible when the ball's not in their hands.
Right.
So, you know, are we going to take the ball out of Corey's hands? Are we going to take the ball out of Andrew Wiggins' hands? Are we going to take the ball out of Tristan's hands or Kelly's hands in order to get our 10th man the ball where he's more comfortable? That makes no sense.
No.
I mean, he's got to be able to play without the ball. And he's got to be able to do winning things like rebound, like defend, and defend as a unit, you know, like understand how to. So these are all things that the guys in the Pan Am, the guys who have played with us the past 2 years, you know, at the qualifiers and last year in our 3 week tour of Europe, those are all things where we're trying to see it. I mean, it's not hard to figure out, you know, who's the best top two player on a team.
Yeah, David, they always say it's easy to pick 1-2 and then 11-12, right?
Exactly.
and it's really difficult, you know, to you know, like the Brazil team and the Brazil teams in general most years, and the Argentina teams, they're 6-10. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
they don't need to have the ball in their hands, and they can impact the game. And you know, the problem is, like at every level, there's so many guys in every country who, sure, you know, you could say, well, I think he's better than he is. But if I said to you, okay, but if he only touches the ball 3 times in 15 minutes of playing time, is he better than that guy? You know, like, does he defend? Does he avoid every screen? Does he rebound every shot? Does he move the ball properly? Does he space properly? Does he do those things better? Well, maybe not, but he's better than him. Okay, but mm-hmm. we're asking him to do that because what he's really good at, we've already got Andrew Wiggins. We've already got Corey. Like, we're not going to take the ball out of those guys' hands. We're going to keep the ball in their hands. So it's hard. And in a short training camp, it's hard to decide who is going to help you and who isn't going to help you. Obviously, from my perspective, I'm in Jay's ear all the time. Like, if you've got guys who can really score but don't particularly love defense, when we start talking about our 10th to 12th guys, I'm constantly saying to Jay, are you serious? Can we please keep a defender so that when we're getting scored on at will, we've got a guy who we can put on the floor who can stop guys, as opposed to a guy who doesn't really defend and score a bit, but we're really only likely going to get him 2 shots anyway. And these are the discussions that constantly go on at every level, you know, whether it's the NBA level, whether it's the national team level. I mean, and you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to make the right choice sometimes. And more time around the kids, more experience you have as a group, as a coaching staff, the better choices you make. But it's difficult. I mean, it's not an easy process, and it's even tougher because everybody in the entire country has their own opinions. But you know, you're trying to win games. You're not trying to put together the 12 best players. This isn't an all-star game. It's you're trying to win a game.